Hello and welcome to Diabetic Health. I'm your host, Eileen Byrne, and I'll be reading articles to you today from medicalnewstoday.com. Statins increase the risk of developing diabetes in at-risk people, by Tim Newman. This was published in October of 2017. Among susceptible individuals, statins, which are a common cholesterol-lowering medication, could increase the risk of type 2 diabetes by 30%. These new findings are sure to reignite debate. Statins lower cholesterol by reducing its production in the liver. They do this by blocking an enzyme called hydroxymethylglutaryl coenzyme A reductase, which is involved in its manufacture. Statins are one of the most widely prescribed types of drug in the United States. Between 2011 and 2012, over a quarter of U.S. adults over the age of 40 were taking cholesterol-lowering medication. The vast majority of these drugs were statins. Alongside their cholesterol-lowering ability, statins also have positive effects on inflammation and oxidative stress. Taken together, it would be unsurprising if statins helped to reduce the risk of developing diabetes. But the reverse may well be true. Evidence is mounting that long-term statin use could increase the risk of type 2 diabetes. The first study to mention this effect was published in 2008. Between then and now, many meta-analyses have been carried out. Some have added evidence supporting a link between statin use and type 2 diabetes, while others have brought such a link into question. Therefore, a definitive answer is yet to be found. Reopening the statin diabetes debate. Many previous studies that pointed out a link did not specifically set out to investigate diabetes and statins. Their prime focus was on cardiovascular events. Because the number of diabetes cases within the experimental group was low, it was difficult to get a good understanding of the associated risks. So, to take a fresh look at the interaction, researchers from the Albert Einstein College of Medicine in New York City, New York, decided to focus their attention on an at-risk subsection of statin users and concentrate specifically on type 2 diabetes. The team used data from the U.S. Diabetes Prevention Program Outcome Study, or DPPOS. DPPOS is a follow-up study to a long-term clinical trial that involved individuals who were obese or overweight and, therefore, at increased risk of developing type 2 diabetes. The original study looked at whether or not weight loss through lifestyle changes or treatment with metformin, which is a drug that controls high blood sugar, might reduce or delay type 2 diabetes in high-risk people. Once this study had ended, participants were invited to take part in DPPOS. Blood pressure and blood fats were measured yearly, and blood glucose was measured every 6 months. At the same time, statin usage was recorded. Data from 3,234 participants were analyzed. At the start of the trial, just 4% were using statins, but after 10 years, around a third were taking the drug. The majority were using either simvastatin or atorvastatin. Statin risks uncovered. Although the likelihood of being prescribed statins rose following a diabetes diagnosis, statin use was also associated with an increased risk of being diagnosed with diabetes. The association was significant, regardless of the treatment group that the participants had been in during the previous trial. Overall, compared with not taking statins, their use was associated with a 36% increase in the risk of developing type 2 diabetes. Although participants who were prescribed statins had higher glucose levels at baseline, this difference was not enough to account for the higher rates of diabetes. To further probe this relationship, the team split the statin data into low and high potency statins. They found no significant differences between the risks in these groups. The authors are quick to mention that the study has shortfalls. It is observational, and so cause and effect cannot be teased apart. Also, statin prescriptions were based on a doctor's assessment, and participants were therefore not randomly assigned. Finally, information on statin dosage was not available for analysis. Despite these caveats, the authors believe that caution is warranted in these conclusions added to earlier studies with similar results. They say, quote, glucose status should be monitored and healthy lifestyle behaviors reinforced in high-risk patients who are prescribed statins for cardiovascular disease prophylaxis, unquote. The debate regarding the relationship between statins and diabetes is certainly not over, and it is likely to rumble on. Because statin use and diabetes are both so prevalent in the United States, it is important to gather as much information as possible regarding any interactions. Further studies are sure to follow, but it may be some time before the debate can be put to bed once and for all. Our next article is by Hannah Nichols. It was published in January of 2018, entitled Diabetes, Can Gene Therapy Normalize Blood Glucose Levels? Researchers may have just found a way to restore normal blood glucose levels in a mouse model of type 1 diabetes, which could prove to be a promising solution for people with type 1 or type 2 diabetes in the future. Dr. George Gittes, a professor of surgery and of pediatrics at the University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine in Pennsylvania, and a team led the study. Their findings were published in the journal Cell Stem Cell. Type 1 diabetes, a chronic autoimmune disease, affects around 1.25 million children and adults in the United States. The immune system that usually destroys germs and foreign substances mistakenly launches an attack on the insulin-producing beta cells that are found in the pancreas, which then results in high blood glucose levels. Over time, type 1 diabetes can have a significant effect on major organs and cause heart and blood vessel disease, damage to the nerves, kidneys, eyes, and feet, skin in the mouth conditions, and complications during pregnancy. Researchers in the type 1 diabetes field have aimed to develop a treatment that preserves and restores function to beta cells, which would in turn replenish insulin, responsible for moving blood glucose into cells for energy. One barrier to this solution is that the new cells that arise from beta cell replacement therapy would likely also be destroyed by the immune system. To overcome this hurdle, the team hypothesized that other similar cells could be reprogrammed to behave in a similar way to beta cells and produce insulin, but which are different enough not to be recognized and destroyed by the immune system. Alpha cells reprogrammed into beta cells. The team engineered an adeno-associated viral, or AAV, vector that delivered two proteins, PDX1 and MAFA, to the mouse pancreas. PDX1 and MAFA support beta cell proliferation, function, and maturation, and they can ultimately transform alpha cells into insulin-producing beta cells. Alpha cells were the ideal candidates for reprogramming. They are abundant, similar to beta cells, and located in the pancreas, which would all help with the reprogramming process. Analysis of the transformed alpha cells showed a nearly complete cellular reprogramming to beta cells. Dr. Gittes and team demonstrated that in a mouse model of diabetes, blood glucose levels were restored for about 4 months with gene therapy. The researchers also found that PDX1 and MAFA transform human alpha cells into beta cells in vitro. Quote, the viral gene therapy appears to create these new insulin-producing cells that are relatively resistant to an autoimmune attack. This resistance appears to be due to the fact that these new cells are slightly different from normal insulin cells, but not so different that they do not function well, unquote, explains Dr. Gittes. The future of diabetes gene therapy. AAV vectors are currently being researched in human gene therapy trials and could be delivered to the pancreas through a non-surgical endoscopic procedure eventually. However, The researchers cautioned that the protection observed in the mice was not permanent, and 4 months of restored glucose levels in a mouse model might translate to several years in humans. Quote, "This study is essentially the first description of a clinically translatable, simple, single intervention in autoimmune diabetes that leads to normal blood sugars, and importantly, with no immunosuppression," unquote, says Dr. Gittes. Quote, "A clinical trial in both type 1 and type 2 diabetes in the immediate foreseeable future is quite realistic. Given the impressive nature of the reversal of the diabetes, along with the feasibility in patients to do AAV gene therapy," unquote, says Dr. George Gittes. The scientists are testing the gene therapy in non-human primates. If successful, they will begin working with the Food and Drug Administration to approve use in humans with diabetes. Type 1 diabetes may be triggered by bacteria. This article is by Honor Whiteman, and this was published in May of 2016. The development of type 1 diabetes may be driven by some forms of bacteria, suggests a newer study by researchers from Cardiff University in the United Kingdom. Study co-author Dr. David Cole of the School of Medicine at Cardiff and colleagues reveal how bacteria activate killer T cells, which are white blood cells that attack healthy cells instead of protecting them, to destroy insulin-producing cells causing type 1 diabetes. The researchers recently published their findings in the Journal of Clinical Investigation. Type 1 diabetes accounts for around 5% of all diabetes cases. Previously known as juvenile diabetes, the condition is most commonly diagnosed in children and young adults. Type 1 diabetes arises when the body is unable to produce insulin, which is the hormone responsible for regulating blood glucose level. Killer T cells have high cross-reactivity. While the precise cause of type 1 diabetes is unclear, past research has shown that the condition occurs when killer T cells destroy beta cells, the cells in the pancreas that produce insulin. In a previous study, Professor Sewell and colleagues found high cross-reactivity among killer T cells, meaning that they can react to numerous triggers, including pathogens. Quote, "Killer T cells sense their environment using cell surface receptors that act like highly sensitive fingertips, scanning for germs," unquote, explains Dr. Cole. Quote, "However, sometimes these sensors recognize the wrong target and the killer T cells attack our own tissue. We and others have shown that this is what happens during type 1 diabetes when killer T cells target and destroy beta cells," unquote. Once these beta cells are destroyed, insulin is no longer produced, meaning patients will require lifelong insulin therapy in order to control blood glucose levels. Study sheds light on how killer T cells turn rogue. In their study, the researchers suggest they may have uncovered a possible cause of type 1 diabetes after finding that bacteria may spur killer T cells to attack beta cells. The researchers identified a part of a bacterium that activates killer T cells, causing them to bind to beta cells and kill them. Quote, "This finding sheds new light on how these killer T cells are turned into rogues, leading to the development of type 1 diabetes," unquote, notes Dr. Cole. The researchers say they hope the results will pave the way for new strategies to diagnose, prevent, and treat type 1 diabetes. Quote, "We still have much to learn about the definitive causes of type 1 diabetes, and we know that there are other genetic and environmental factors at play. This research is significant as it pinpoints for the first time an external factor that can trigger T cells that have the capacity to destroy beta cells," says Dr. Cole. As well as helping to understand what contributes to the development of type 1 diabetes, the researchers say their findings may also shed light on the causes of other autoimmune conditions. Type 1 diabetes. Almost half of patients produce insulin. Again, this is by Honor Whiteman, and this is from June of 2017. Type 1 diabetes is often described as a condition in which the body fails to produce the hormone insulin. Research, however, provides further evidence that not all insulin production is lost with the condition, and this may be down to an anti-inflammatory protein. Researchers from Uppsala University in Sweden found that nearly half of patients who had been living with diabetes for more than 10 years produced some insulin. What is more, these insulin-producing patients also had higher blood levels of immune cells that produce a protein called interleukin-35, which is believed to suppress the immune system and reduce inflammation. Study co-author Dr. Daniel Espis of the Department of Medical Cell Biology at Uppsala University and colleagues recently reported their findings in the journal Diabetes Care. Type 1 diabetes is estimated to affect around 1.25 million children and adults in the U.S. The condition arises when the immune system mistakenly attacks the insulin-producing cells, or beta cells, of the pancreas. It was once thought that patients with type 1 diabetes experienced a complete loss of insulin production, but increasingly, studies have indicated that some patients still possess functioning beta cells. For the latest study, Dr. Espis and colleagues set out to determine whether there are any immunological mechanisms that might explain why some patients with type 1 diabetes still produce some insulin. The research included 113 patients with type 1 diabetes who were age 18 and older. All patients had been living with the condition for at least 10 years. Using the ultra-sensitive ELISA test, the researchers measured the cells' levels of C-peptide in the patient's blood, which is an indicator of insulin production. Additionally, the researchers measured levels of circulating cytokines among the patients, including IL-35. Cytokines are proteins secreted by immune cells that play a key role in cell signaling. The team found that almost half of patients with type 1 diabetes were C-peptide positive, meaning that they had some level of insulin production. The results also revealed that patients who were C-peptide positive had significantly higher levels of IL-35 in their blood compared with patients who were C-peptide negative, that is, those who had lost all insulin production. Previous research has suggested that IL-35 can suppress autoimmune disease, so it is possible that in some patients with type 1 diabetes, the protein prevents the immune system from attacking and destroying insulin-producing beta cells. However, Dr. Espis and colleagues were unable to determine whether C-peptide-positive patients had higher IL-35 levels at type 1 diabetes diagnosis, or whether levels of the protein increased over time due to a reduced immune system attack on beta cells. While further studies are needed to gain a better understanding of how IL-35 might relate to insulin production, the researchers believe that their current findings demonstrate the potential of IL-35 as a drug treatment for type 1 diabetes. Furthermore, since the findings show that almost half of patients with type 1 diabetes produce some insulin, the team says that it may be possible to encourage regeneration of their remaining beta cells and boost insulin production. Researchers at Uppsala University Hospital are already testing the feasibility of these strategies. Common chemicals in plastic linked to chronic disease. This is by Tim Newman and was published in July of 2017. A research team from Australia has recently investigated some chemicals commonly found in plastics. They demonstrated a link between higher levels of these chemicals in urine and increases in cardiovascular disease, type 2 diabetes, and hypertension in men. Plastics are all around us. They are used in everything from tents to trains and are often part of the packaging that surrounds our food and drink products. Produced from a range of chemicals and in a variety of ways, plastics have become intertwined with modern life, often replacing wood, metal, and other more expensive and less hardy materials. One group of chemicals often found in plastics are phthalates. These increase the flexibility, transparency, durability, and longevity of plastics. Phthalates are commonly used in food packaging, medications, toys, and even medical devices. Over recent years, there have been discussions around the safety of phthalates, and as a result, they are gradually being replaced in many products in Canada, Europe, and the United States. However, there is no definitive evidence that they cause serious illness, and millions of tons of phthalates are still used globally each year. Phthalates and disease in the spotlight. A study published in the journal Environmental Research takes a fresh look at the links between phthalates and long-term health. The researchers involved are based at the University of Adelaide and the South Australian Health and Medical Research Institute. The team was headed up by Associate Professor Zuman Shi from the University of Adelaide's Medical School. In this study, which is the first to explore total phthalate exposure among Australian males, data were taken from 1,500 men. Phthalates were detected in 99.6% of the men aged 35 and older. This matches up with previous work showing that increasing age and Western diets are associated with higher concentration of phthalates. Earlier studies have also shown that phthalate levels are higher in men who consume more packaged and processed foods, more carbonated soft drinks, and less fruits and vegetables. Levels of the chemicals in each individual were then matched up with chronic diseases. Quote, "We found that the prevalence of cardiovascular disease, type 2 diabetes, and high blood pressure increased among those men with higher total phthalic levels," says Dr. Zuman Shi. Even once the data were adjusted for lifestyle and socioeconomic factors, the results remained relatively unchanged. Similarly, although 82% of the men involved in the study were overweight or obese, which are conditions known to increase the risk of several chronic diseases, once the researchers adjusted their analysis to account for this, the results were still significant. Do phthalates cause disease? Earlier research into phthalate levels had produced similar results, finding a relationship with cardiovascular disease, type 2 diabetes, and hypertension. However, previous studies have often used women, children, or elderly populations. As aforementioned, this study is the first look at the relationship between phthalates and chronic disease in middle-aged and older men. Current study cannot prove cause and effect. In other words, it's not clear whether the higher levels of phthalates cause the chronic conditions or whether the higher levels are a result of disease-related processes. Although, as Professor Shi explains, some believe that there could be a causal link. Quote, "While we still don't understand the exact reasons why phthalates are independently linked to disease, we do know the chemicals' impact on the body as endocrine system, which controls hormone release that regulates the body's growth, metabolism, and sexual development and function," unquote. Alongside the connection between elevated phthalate levels and chronic disease, the team also found that higher levels are associated with an increase in inflammatory biomarkers. This backs up other work demonstrating the pro-inflammatory effects of phthalates. Chronic diseases such as cardiovascular disease and type 2 diabetes are often referred to as lifestyle diseases. This is because lifestyle factors such as inactivity, diet, and smoking play a significant role in their development. However, over recent years, there has been interest in examining other potential environmental factors that might be at work, and phthalate ingestion is just one factor. Although the study leaves us with more questions than answers, Professor Shi gives some sound advice, saying, quote, "While further research is required, reducing environmental phthalates exposure where possible, along with the adoption of healthier lifestyles, may help to reduce the risk of chronic disease," unquote. These researchers join the ranks of others who have found a correlation between phthalates and disease. Next, an important and much more difficult question needs answering. Is it a causal relationship? Could lack of vitamin A be a cause of diabetes? By Honor Whiteman, This was published in June of 2017. Researchers have found that vitamin A may be crucial to the insulin-secreting function of beta cells, a discovery that could open the door to new treatments for diabetes. Type 2 diabetes accounts for around 90 to 95% of all diagnosed cases, and this arises when the beta cells of the pancreas fail to produce enough insulin, the hormone that regulates blood glucose, or when the body is no longer able to use insulin effectively. Type 1 diabetes, which accounts for the remaining 5% of cases, occurs when the immune system destroys beta cells, hampering insulin production. In a new study recently reported in the Endocrine Journal, researchers from the United Kingdom and Sweden discovered that there are large quantities of vitamin A receptors on the surface of beta cells called GPRC5C. Quote, "When we discovered that insulin cells have a cell surface expressed receptor for vitamin A, we thought it was important to find out why and what the purpose is of a cell surface receptor interacting with vitamin A, mediating a rapid response to vitamin A," unquote, says study co-author Albert Salehi of the University of Lund in Sweden. On partially blocking the vitamin A receptors in beta cells from mice, eliminating the ability of vitamin A to bind to these cells, the team found that their ability to secrete insulin was reduced in response to sugar. Vitamin A deficiency may destroy beta cells. For their study, Salehi and colleagues also tested beta cells derived from humans with and without type 2 diabetes. Again, the researchers partially blocked GPRC5C in these beta cells. When sugar was applied to these cells, the team found that their insulin-secreting ability decreased by almost 30%. Since impaired insulin secretion is a major cause of type 2 diabetes, the researchers believe that this finding indicates that a lack of vitamin A found in liver, fish oils, and various fruits and vegetables may play a role in the disease. What is more, the team discovered that a lack of vitamin A led to a reduction in beta cells' ability to stave off inflammation, while a complete deficiency of vitamin A caused beta cells to die. This finding suggests that vitamin A deficiency may also be involved in type 1 diabetes, which is caused by the destruction of beta cells. Quote, "In animal experiments, it is known that newborn mice need vitamin A to develop their beta cells in a normal way. Most likely, the same applies to human beings. Children must absorb a sufficient amount of vitamin A through their diet," notes Dr. Salehi. Compounds targeting GPRC5C may lead to new diabetes treatments. While these findings indicate that vitamin A may be beneficial for diabetes, the researchers stress that increasing the intake of this vitamin, particularly through supplements, may be too risky. They note that excess vitamin A levels have been associated with osteoporosis and other health problems. However, they say that it is unlikely that one could get too much vitamin A from dietary sources alone. Still, the team is now on the hunt for small molecules or peptides that can activate GPRC5C on the surface of beta cells, but which do not cause the side effects associated with vitamin A.